Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Unlimited. Do you feel called to get involved in your local government? What about running for local government? I ask this because in today's episode of Unlimited, we're engaging some of the mindset barriers that hold especially women back from running for office. I think we can all agree that women and other minorities are drastically underrepresented in most levels of government in the US. For example, women make up 51% of the population, but only 31% of state legislative seats, 30% of statewide elected executive seats. Women of color only make up 26% of state legislative seats, and 18% are serving as statewide elected executives. Obviously, this is problematic. We've been seeing how this is problematic because even if we assume well-meaning intent, when people imagine or assume what you need, they're seeing through their own lens, which is colored by their experience and what they want, what they think is beneficial and supportive for what works for them. And that's not always what's helpful or supportive to the people that they're making the assumptions about. Hence that whole conversation about who's at the table when decisions are being made, which we talked about last week a little bit with my conversation with Andre Vasquez. And we looked at developing and leading with growth mindset once you are a representative and stepping into that role as representative. But we need more. We need more governing bodies to be more representative of the people that they're making decisions for. We need more people involved. And what's interesting is that a lot of women are getting involved. Record numbers of women ran for office in 2020, donated to campaigns, got elected to office. And this is especially in thanks to organizations like She Should Run. But again, we need more. Lots of women get involved, but most of them volunteer in the communities. Most of them don't consider actually running for office as an option for them. Some of that is based in real obstacles and intentionally placed obstacles, but some of it is based in internalized beliefs and assumptions around what it would look like to get involved in public office. Some of those involve things like, oh, it's going to be a huge time commitment and I just don't have enough time or bandwidth. It's scary to put yourself out there. It's going to involve a lot of energy and a level of confidence that I don't have. It's going to be contentious. It's going to be a big fight. Everything in politics is a big fight. It's going to mean a total career change. It's like a complete pivot in what I do now in the world to being a government official. I will have to give up advocacy and I'm not going to be able to advocate for the things that matter to me because I am going to be in office and have responsibilities that are different. To engage these, this week, I'm chatting with Crystal Larson about some of those specific beliefs that hold us back and what it actually takes to get involved and even run for an elected office at a local level. Crystal Larson is a lifelong resident of Lake County, Illinois, currently residing in its oldest village of Hainesville with her spouse and two children. She started her own technology and consulting business in 2003 as a small web development company and has since traveled the country working with local, national, and international companies, providing consulting services and implementing solutions to meet unique operational and security challenges in the business-to-business environment. Crystal was elected in 2021 as the first openly transgender official in Lake County, Illinois. She is a current board member of A Safe Place for Help, supporting victims of domestic violence and human trafficking throughout Lake County, a member of PFLAG of Grays Lake, Round Lake, advocating for the LGBTQ+ community, serves as treasurer of Union Square Homeowners Association, and a member of the Grays Lake Chamber of Commerce. Some of what we talk about in this episode include misconceptions about running for office and being in office, the importance of knowing what's important to you, developing confidence, being visible, application of your current life and career to a governmental office, where to start if you do want to get involved, and staying centered when doing all of the things. At a time when lots of things in our life seem very overwhelming, I hope that this conversation reduces some of the overwhelm that you may feel in getting involved in the areas that you care about to make the impact that you are able to make in the world. So, without further ado, let's get started. Hey there, I'm Valerie Friedlander, Certified Life Business Alignment Coach, and this is Unlimited. This podcast bridges the individual and the societal, scientific and spiritual, positive and negative, nerdy and, no, there's just a lot of nerdy. Come on board and let's unlock a life that's as badass as you are. Welcome, Crystal. I'm so excited to have you on Unlimited today.
Thank you very much for having me, Valerie. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yay. I would love, as we dive in, for you to share just a little bit about your background. And you and I chatted before this, and I was fascinated with some of the things that you have done that ended up leading you into the political realm, like playtesting games, like hashtag nerd here. So tell me a little bit about who you are and what you're all about.
So I'm a 45-year-old transgender woman, which is in and of itself, just, it's a big deal to try and deal with. I'm a 30-year software developer. I run my own software developing and consulting business. I've been elected to office twice. Currently, I'm serving as a clerk of Avon Township. I represent over 67,000 people. You know, my passion for that really came from values that my mom instilled in me. At a very early age, she had me stuffing literature in mailboxes as a precinct committee woman back in the day, going back to the 80s. I had the opportunity to meet and work with and even serve in some cases with some of our state representatives in my young teenage years. And as I've gotten older, that influence that was a huge part of my life back then has become very prominent in who I am today, and saying, I know that I'm part of a group that needs to be represented, both women and transgender women. I mean, the LGBTQ community is significantly underrepresented. I want to be active, and what better way to be active than by putting myself completely out there and trying to empower women and others to run for offices where we're significantly underrepresented. From what you said about the game theory, though, you know, that was a passion of mine growing up, too. And this is one that came from my dad. He introduced me to Dungeons and Dragons. It had this really complex mathematical rule system. That's something that really appeals to my software developer's brain, to my analytical brain, to go, there's these hard rules, but how do you work within that rule system? How do you better understand those rules to play within a framework, stretch the framework to its boundaries, and really to understand, probably the best part is, how can I explore parts of myself without actually doing it in real life and taking a significant risk?
Mm, yeah.
So you have an opportunity through that gaming to be able to go, well, what if I behaved this way in a certain scenario or that way in a certain scenario? And the only risk is to a piece of paper and a couple hours of your session, not, you know, your entire life and your career path down the road.
Yeah. It seems like it would be great preparatory work for bigger decision-making. You mentioned what led you to run for office. And there are a lot of us, and I imagine most of my listeners definitely see the importance of having women in office and having representation, knowing that and wanting to be involved, but not just be involved, not just pass out flyers, which was what I grew up with too, of like, not just the phone calls and the, you know, phone banking and all of that, but you could also run. And that's becoming more and more of a thing. But I'm curious with that, what are some of the misconceptions that you have found about running for office?
Probably the first misconception that I see is, how do I even start? It's so overwhelming. And people see mainstream media today and they look at Congress people, they look at all of these officials that represent hundreds of thousands of people and how overwhelmingly difficult it is, how polarizing it can be. And people see that as, well, this is what it must be like in local government. This is what it must be like in a countywide government. And it's not. So they see this perception of, I'm going to be attacked by one side or the other, and it's very polarizing. The reality is, at the local level, it's really just about serving your community in a very small way. You know, the other perceptions of, well, the media is always around me, or, you know, it's a full-time engagement, and how am I going to be able to suspend my career and my family and all of my other interests to be able to serve as, let's say, a school board trustee? And it does seem very overwhelming. Most school board trustees probably spend 4 hours to 6 hours a month actually working through that decision-making process and attending those meetings. It's not as overwhelming as people think. The time commitment is not as overwhelming. I think there are more women who volunteer more hours every month than are required to actually represent people in their district.
Mm. Okay. So that you just hit on something that really jumped out to me. So often when it comes to serving the community, women think of volunteering and they think, I need to just give my time. And I would imagine that really, like, isn't that just kind of reaffirming some of the patriarchal norms that we exist in, that like we're supposed to just give our time away instead of like, actually, hey, how about holding office where you get paid for your time?
I tend to disagree a little bit with that, only because I've been a volunteer forever, I guess is the best way to put it. I've volunteered as a coach. I've volunteered as a community leader. I volunteer with my homeowners association. I volunteered for political campaigns. And it's not because I feel like I have an obligation to give. It's because I feel like I'm helping to develop and build people up. It's mentorship. It's more about helping to empower others. So my work as a basketball coach, as an example, is all with youth. And it was predominantly with girls from fifth grade and up through high school. And it was about empowering them, normalizing athletics, normalizing sports, saying it's okay to be aggressive out there. It's okay to be yourself. It's okay to work as a team and cooperatively and collaboratively. And don't feel like you have to fit into the mold of what men's athletics are. Fit into the mold of what your athletics are. But also to teach them, to let them become natural leaders in their own rights. There are people who are natural leaders, but they're afraid to do that. And so through volunteering, through that mentorship, you can start to build those individuals up who really want to embrace that, but just don't know how.
Mm.
I don't see that as giving time. I see that as building community.
I love that. And my calling out volunteering and being paid for your time, I don't mean at all to knock volunteering. I think volunteering is amazing and it's so important. It's so necessary. I brought it up mostly because of the acknowledgement of a tendency to assume that women will give their time. And so many women don't always value their time. And so that there are multiple ways that you can have an energetic exchange and value your time and when what you have available to you. So within that, I wonder, how do you decide within all of the things that you have, all the hats that you wear, what you give your time to?
I think it really comes down to understanding what you're truly passionate about. In my case, serving my community has always been a passion. And so for me, it's really easy to go, you know what? This is something that I think I can do. It's something that I want to give my time to. It's something where I think it can benefit the community by bringing my perspective and my voice to a panel of 6 or 7 other people and be able to listen to others and represent them as well. And that's really what it comes down to when making any type of decision is, does this really matter to me? Or is it just something that's extraneous? It's a fleeting thought or idea. Running for office is a 2 or 4, or in some cases, 6-year dedication to a particular thing. It's certainly not something to do lightly and go, well, today I think I'll go for office and tomorrow I'm going for drinks with the girls. It just doesn't work that way. But if you're really committed to serving your community or to making a difference, if you see some type of behaviors in that unit of government where you're not happy with the direction it's going, showing up at a meeting or two can be useful. But if you find over that meeting or two that you really have a talent or a passion or a desire to do that, maybe that's something to seriously consider. Mm. And I know we talked about barriers a little bit earlier. As you start to show up at these meetings, people will recognize that you're there. They'll recognize that interest and they'll recognize if that passion is there. If it's really there, those people will take notice and they'll go, they'll encourage, they'll help, they'll support. The idea, another barrier, building that campaign, building those volunteers up. People who listen, people who agree with you, they're willing to volunteer a small bit of their time so that their views are represented by somebody who's committed to doing it on a regular basis. So again, breaking down those barriers, a couple attendances, a little bit of involvement, understand if it's something you want to do, inspire people who are watching you be involved. That's how you start to build that base and build that confidence to be able to run.
And, you know, I just heard you say something that actually jumped out to me as like, oh, I hadn't even thought about it like this. And that was that idea that showing up, there will be people there who will be enthusiastic about that. Because as you mentioned earlier, it's like, you kind of think it's all going to be this big contentious, like battle and this side and that side and all of that. But that people, when you look at the local level, people want you to help them. They want to support people who are going to step out and do things for them. So it's not like you're going out all by yourself. There are people there who are cheering you on, who are like, yes, please take things. Like all of the things that we think of like volunteering, like that actually exists in running for office too. That those people who are willing to help out, to show up, are in all the places, not just the places that you're used to being in, but all of them. So that was a surprise for me. But I, you know, just talking about this, what was something that was a surprise for you when you stepped into either running for office or being in office?
A surprise. So when I first ran for office and was elected, the biggest surprise to me was nobody's ever there. You might have one or two people who show up to board meetings that are actually engaged, because most of the business that goes on at a local level is pretty routine. I think in, you know, now 4.5 years of serving in office, but really 12 years of being deeply involved, I've been to 3 meetings where we've had more than 30 people show up. Usually it's not that contentious. I was so surprised that showing up at meetings, it's me and 2 others, and we go out for coffee afterwards. And it's just, it's not that intimidating. It seems like it, but it's not. The other big surprise is really it's all at a local level. It's very bureaucratic. It's very administrative. It's very day-to-day, almost running a business. It's not political at all. There are some political pieces here and there that do come up. School boards tend to be a little bit more politicized than local government, just because people are concerned about the education of their children. So they tend to get a little bit more concerned. They don't care in local government about which garbage contract somebody's going to sign on to. They don't care about the utility provider contract they're going to sign on to, because people just generally say, my garbage is picked up, I don't care. The only time you hear in local government from people is when something isn't right. And so the less complaints you hear, the more you know you're doing your job well. And that's one of the big surprises I saw too, is there's just the lack of involvement at times, so that things do continue as normal and people don't really see that. And we can see that at the polls very clearly. Local elections, we see anywhere from 7 to 14% turnouts, as opposed to presidential or gubernatorial elections where it's 50 to 70%. People care about their state leaders because they make very sweeping decisions. But at the local level, the general mentality seems to be, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But people don't even know whether it's broken or not.
That is so, The ability to just go on as business as usual, and what feels broken to some people don't even notice. And that's a huge privilege to not notice those things. And, you know, so like, as you talk about that, I'm like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like, how many places do we not notice what's broken for other people, and how important it is to recognize that just because we aren't experiencing it as broken doesn't mean that it's not broken. And taking a little time to recognize that, hey, if somebody's saying this is broken, this is not working for me, maybe engaging that. And it sounded like, you know, some of that is what moved you to run, of going, hey, for women, for LGBTQ people, for transgender people, for people of color, like, this isn't working. Business as usual, which may seem fine for some people, isn't working. And are you listening? And if you don't have that representation, then those people may very well go, meh, I don't see a problem with that. As you showed up, one of the things that you mentioned is that idea of risk and putting yourself out there. And that's, you know, on so many different levels. We talked a little bit about the risk of time and the overwhelm that that can cause in stepping up and saying, I'm going to do this. A lot of people, it seems very scary. I mean, at any level of social risk, it feels very scary to put yourself out there. And I work with a lot of people who are like, I want to feel more confident. And it's like, well, if you haven't done it, you're not going to feel confident. But still, there's a risk assessment that goes into that choice to be visible and be a public figure and all of that. What helped you navigate that and make that decision?
I think a lot of that has to do with my corporate business experience, being able to present to groups, to board members, in conference rooms, being able to talk to a small intimate group that at least they were engaged and wanted to hear what I had to say. And over time, it was going, okay, I'm comfortable speaking in these smaller public settings. You know, sometimes the ideas were different. They were not business as usual as far as the operations of a business went, as far as the conventional business thinking. And so that does put yourself out there a little bit. And the risk there is, in a lot of cases, simply, no, we're not ready to adopt that. Or let's look into it. We'll come back to it, which typically that means the same thing. But I think there's another step up when you go to attend a public board meeting and you have an opinion on something that they're going to be discussing that night. Talking in public where you're not sure of your audience is terrifying. It's terrifying. The first time I made a statement at a public board meeting, oh God, I was quaking in my shoes, literally. I mean, you could feel the butterflies rising up. You could feel all that anxiety, all that tension was building up. And then you go to speak and you can almost feel your voices quavering that first time. Like, oh my gosh, am I really doing this? Am I really doing this? And it's just, the statement could be as simple as, thank you for doing what you did last month. And it's still terrifying to thank people publicly. But starting with something very small like that, something positive, something that doesn't start a controversy, just, I want to thank you for the vote that you had last month. I completely agree with that and appreciate you representing our community that way. That brief few seconds of comment, that first time in a room where you don't know, that's scary.
Yeah.
But it takes repetition and doing those types of things over and over again. And starting with those little steps, those baby steps of, you did a good job, thanks, leads you to the point where something isn't right. And you can go, I've been speaking so many times now. When you say something I don't agree with, I'm going to call you on it. And you're still in that really small setting. The bigger the office, the bigger the setting, the scarier it gets. Back in June, I spoke at a Woodstock Pride event. And okay, 500-600 people. And I followed Congresswoman Lauren Underwood. Okay, that's a big stage and big booths to follow.
Yeah.
And what I found is all that nervousness and those butterflies, because I've been talking for so long in public, I didn't have a single one of them. It was all that repetition, all that success, all those challenges, and all that experience over time, it was like, Okay, I got this. I know what I'm talking about. I know my subject matter. I know my audience. I'm just going to say what I got to say. And it was incredibly positive. It is those baby steps and that repetition and taking tiny little nibbles before you start trying to take that really big bite.
Yes. Yes, yes. That's, I mean, and that as absolutely any confidence building, right? You've got to just do it first, but you can start small. You don't have to start at the top, you know, try and jump to the top of the mountain. That's not necessary. I love
100%.
That. 100%. Such an important affirmation. So getting involved, showing up to some meetings, knowing that, okay, I'm participating. I'm ready. This is important. I want to do this. And especially like building on skill sets, stepping into, oh, well, I've got this business experience and I can engage here. And of course, I would imagine that the skill sets that you're developing being an office feeds your skill sets in business. Would you
absolutely
say that's true?
Absolutely. The soft skills that you build, especially in office, are invaluable because sometimes it's a face-to-face confrontational meeting with an upset constituent, right? They just walk in the office and they're like, I'm coming in and we're talking. And you have to realize I'm a public official. I have to sit here and take it, right? I have to sit here and listen to these concerns. Even if I don't agree with them, I still need to listen to the concern because I do need to be sensitive to it. And so you learn to deal with those conflicts. You learn to deal with conflict resolution without somebody being there as a bridge in between, which helps develop those softer leadership skills and those softer listening skills. But it also helps you with negotiating different personalities because in most boards, you aren't all elected all at the same time. It's half the board is incumbents and half the board are newly elected or recently reelected. So you're dealing with different personalities, some of which you don't know, some of which are entrenched in old thinking, some of which are bringing new ideas to the table, and those new ideas might not even be compatible. So you're learning to negotiate a very broad playing field, but there's no single person at the top who has this authority to say, and this is what we're doing. It has to be a group consensus for that idea to take hold. It's a lot of soft skills from a governmental representation side. I don't want to say political, but when you're representing those people, it is a soft skill, but you can bring your business skills or your professional skills, your parenting skills actually make a big difference.
I bet.
Oh my gosh, these two are fighting again. Just go to your separate rooms and we'll come back to it later. That happens.
Totally believe that.
You know, so all of those different types of skills, regardless of what that background is, they have a lot of relevance and bearing. From my side, it's a lot of business operations and software development. So reviewing policy, that's something that I'm very good with. It's something that I can do that avoids us having to look at attorneys until we're ready for a final document when we're reviewing our internal policies. It's okay, let's develop it. I'll draft it. And then they can look at it for an hour instead of spending 10 hours actually composing a policy based on their best practices. From a software perspective, again, bringing that to document management processes, something I'm very familiar with as a professional. Well, we can start getting rid of paper and going to digital documentation and do it inexpensively. We don't need a $5 million budget to digitize documents, some of which go back into the 1800s that we have to maintain.
Oh, geez.
Seriously.
You know, as we're talking about like this merging of the representation and business, as someone who navigates both worlds, I would love for you to share your perspective on how these actually play together and ways that maybe they don't play together.
I think they can all play together very well in the sandbox if you're mindful of how you play. And I know that takes some serious soft skills, and sometimes some of that role playing helps too.
Right.
But we look at business and politics. Business people go into politics, but politicians, they come from all walks of life. You have doctors, you have professionals, you have lawyers. I know everybody hears that all the time. We need less lawyers in Congress. Forget Congress. We're looking at the local level. And we do have small business owners who are also mayors. We have people who run hair salons who are trustees or their clerks, because a lot of these are their part-time involvement. Like, I live in the tiny little village of Haynesville. We've got a little over 3,000 people. We don't have a need for a full-time mayor. Our mayor is retired, and that's it. The mayor before him was a stay-at-home mom. The mayor before that was another retiree, and that's because they don't spend that much time doing that job. There's just not a need for it. The trustees, that's up to their level of involvement. Some of them would spend 3 or 4 hours a month, and most of that was at meetings or reviewing some documents. It's not that difficult. In a larger village or in a larger jurisdiction, that might take a little bit more time, but you can still be all of those things. That business experience helps you to understand the contracts that come before a local body, to understand, you know, the hiring and HR policies that still need to be there. It helps you to understand the tasks that government performs as a business, because there is a business side to it. You deal with budgets, you deal with, you know, how to deal with customer complaints. That's your constituents. You learn with what services do you need to provide, what services you can't provide, but are better provided by somebody else, and how to say, we're going to subcontract that work out. So that business experience is part of politics, but so is the activism. And we look at some of the leaders who are out there, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg or John Lewis, who caused all kinds of good trouble as both politicians and as activists, and in some cases as lawyers or business leaders or faith leaders, volunteers. All of those can play very, very well in a sandbox together. There is no reason they can't.
I love it. What has been one of the most rewarding things for you stepping into being a public figure and a representative?
So this is where that idea of a politician and an activist can dovetail together very nicely. So as a politician and being elected, okay, first as a transgender woman, having, you know, 3 or 4,000 people publicly come out and say, I validate you. That is an amazing feeling to go, we believe in you. We validate you. You are real the way that you are. Mm-hmm. That's a confidence builder, regardless of whether you're transgender, female, male, young, old. I don't care. When people come out and say, we think you're the best person for the job. Wow. I mean, that's huge.
Literal vote of confidence.
Literally a lot of votes of confidence.
Yeah.
But the most rewarding part is being able to say, if these people were willing to hear me and they have confidence in me and I can talk to them now, I now have a bigger platform for my activism. It's no longer I walk into a room and go, okay, here's my story. It's I can now walk into a room and share my story going, and this is my title. This is my platform. And these are people who have said and affirmed, we like your platform. So it's like a public speaker goes out and goes, I fill rooms with 300 or 400 people. You should hear what I have to say. You know, I fill the room with 3,000 people. Please listen to what I have to say. And the impact of those words stretches much further and in some cases much stronger. So me talking to members of my own LGBTQ community and going, I ran for office and this is what happened and it was successful. Some of them have been inspired to go, well, how do I get involved? How do I run for office? But I'm also the member of a local women's governmental group. Our goal is literally to get women elected to office. And so, again, me being out there as a public figure can help inspire those next future leaders to step up to the plate and go, well, if she can do it, and these other women who are part of this group can do it, why can't I? And not only that, I know they're there to hold my hand along the way. And so that is one of the things that I really love, is how women hold each other's hands and prop each other up rather than tear each other down and fight for every little piece of power that's out there.
Yeah, it's not a ladder. It's an infinite sandbox.
Exactly. We don't just break the glass ceilings. We chew on that glass and we share it with everyone else and say, there's another ceiling. You go break that one.
And then we have a beach.
You know it.
Who doesn't want that? I love it. So if somebody wants to run, if they're like, Crystal has convinced me, I'm going to do this, where would they start?
Wow, good question. if somebody's interested in local running for local government, the first thing they should do is go to their board meetings, get involved there, understand what the topics are, what the discussion is. Will they actually fill a need, or is that need being met?
What board meetings should they go to? I feel like I get emails for multiple kinds of board meetings, like school board meetings or
school board meetings,
city board meetings, or
for most people, it's a village board meeting. Okay. But yes, city board meetings for larger governments, township meetings. You'll get to hear people's perspectives, your elected people, officials' perspectives. You'll get to hear the issues that are going on. County board meetings are far less accessible because most of those happen during the day, during the week. That makes it difficult for people to get involved.
What's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs then?
It can be if they have the time.
If they can block out the time. But
for some entrepreneurs, it's, no, you're killing my prime time. For others, it's, oh, well, I'm not doing anything till later tonight. I've got a couple hours. Let's go. So it really does depend on each person's circumstance.
So,
but learn what the issues are in your local area. And in some cases, you can go, I really don't have a way I can make a significant impact in this way because it's being done right. But if you continue to follow and you see new people are coming up to run for election, you can go, but I know their voice and I don't want that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's running to prevent somebody bad. Sometimes it's to change what you think is bad or to enhance something that's good to make it better, whatever. I mean, everybody's got their own reason.
I would say we probably can make anything better given some of the dynamics we have going on in the world right now, that there's, even if it's just filing systems.
Truth. Hard truth.
Okay. So be thinking now and start looking for some board meetings to show up at and listen. You don't have to go to talk, just go to listen to start and then go from there.
Yeah.
Make connections.
As people go to festivals and fairs or even farmers markets, some of the various political parties will have tables at those events.
Okay.
Take some time and talk to the people who are there.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised at who's behind those booths. So you think, oh, it's a little tabling event. Somebody's going to send, you know, a generic representative. And you find out that that generic representative is like a retired four-time congressperson who's there at a farmer's market talking to people.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, holy cow. I just talked to somebody who spent, you know, 16 years as a congresswoman and had a chance to actually just talk to them. And it wasn't inaccessible. Wow.
Yeah. Y'all aren't inaccessible.
No, I mean, it seems like, oh, you showed up at this event, you put your pretty face on Facebook and Instagram and the Twitter and the this and the that because FaceTime and publicity. Okay, true story. We do that. Also, true story is people who ordinarily couldn't come visit us at an office or pick up a phone or even send an email can walk up to us and go, so talk to me about this thing. Yeah. And you can engage them and have that dialogue because you are accessible. So that's part of it too.
Yeah.
A big part of it.
What helps you stay centered as you engage with everything? Because, you know, I mean, as wonderful to show up, there are probably times where it feels overwhelming and there's a lot because that's life and we all have those moments. What helps you stay centered in those times?
Okay, my therapist. I'm not going to lie. Therapy is not a bad thing. Finding the right therapist is important.
Yeah.
Finding somebody who understands what roles you fill and how those affect you, and over time developing that relationship, hugely important. Meditation makes a huge difference for me. Taking an hour of quiet time every so often, and I set an hour aside every week on Sundays, quite literally. This is my time. Don't disturb me. Don't walk in on me. No phones, no technology, no nothing. Just meditate. Sometimes it's very focused. Sometimes it just lets those squirrel-brained thoughts all over the place just wind their way through my system and go, okay, the clutter's gone. Journaling, I think it's another form of meditation to be able to sit there and slowly handwrite those thoughts out on paper. Take your time because your pencil goes a lot slower than your keyboard.
Mm.
And it forces you to refocus about the topic you're working on and lets you think about that a little bit more in depth and explore it. Social time with either friends or with family, that's big. And being able to speak to them openly about what's going on in my life, having those bonds of trust, you know, people that I can talk to honestly and know they're going to give me their honest feedback. And sometimes it doesn't feel supportive because it's criticism, but that's necessary. You know, for somebody to say, no, you are really going a little off the rails, sweetie. Come on. You know, we need those reality checks sometimes. And as much as they can be painful, they're also beneficial to our growth and our stability.
Yeah, that's a big one of we need our cheerleaders, but we also need people who are willing to go, I love you. I understand where you're coming from. And maybe you want to look at that. Like maybe that's not quite where you want. Let's work that one out a little bit. That might not be most helpful or do the thing that you want it to do.
Or it's just going to distract you from what you're trying to accomplish, which are really those core things.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that comes down to you have to identify what's important to you. And it's what's important to you today, what's important to you for 5 years from now. And that'll constantly change. You know, 30 years ago, I wanted to be a software developer. Today, I'm more involved with activism, with volunteerism. I still am a software developer, but my passion has changed over time because let's face it, 30 years of doing the same thing, I don't care what it is, it gets stale and stagnant no matter how much you grow within that field.
Yeah. Well, I often will talk about values and the importance of making decisions based off of your values, but also recognizing that values evolve like you do. And, you know, like stepping into motherhood, my values evolved. Like things that weren't considerations before became considerations. And stepping into entrepreneurship, same thing. Things evolved. So, yeah. But there's also a steady you within that. So before we wrap up, I love to ask, what does it mean to you to be unlimited?
To be yourself, to be myself, regardless of what myself is. It's to truly love yourself from the inside and not be afraid to express who you are, whether it's politically, whether it's in business, whether it's with your family. Be honest with others, be honest with yourself, and don't be afraid of others' opinions of you. People are always going to disagree. Don't let that stop you. Don't let that be your barrier that prevents you from trying new things or from doing the things that you love. It's really about being true to yourself and not giving a flip about what other people think. Don't let their judgment validate you. Let you validate yourself.
Yeah. And when you want to feel unlimited, what song do you listen to?
There's two of them that really do this for me. Both of them by artists in the same vein. Both of them by artists of different decades, but both of them influencing each other even today. The first one is Madonna's Express Yourself.
Yeah.
Because it really is an anthem, not just for women, but for all people, that it's okay to express yourself. It's okay to be you, be unique. Don't worry about those judgments. Just put yourself out there. The second one is Born This Way. And honestly, this song still makes me cry. And they're happy tears because it's, this is who you are. Don't apologize for it. You are valid. Draw on that confidence. Be yourself. Be confident. Do what you're going to do. And it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's what I take from those things. Just be authentic. And even those mistakes you'll learn from and they'll make you better down the road.
Yeah, that resiliency, so important. Awesome. Thank you so much, Crystal, for being here. It's been a pleasure having this conversation.
Valerie, absolutely, anytime, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I so appreciate you being here. If you got something out of today's episode, please share it. Leave me a review, take a screenshot, and post it on social with a shout out to me. Send it to a friend, or, you know, all of the above. Want to hang out more? Join me on Instagram. Or better yet, get on my mailing list to make sure you don't miss out on anything. And remember, your possibilities are as unlimited as you are. Allow yourself to shine, my friend. The world needs your light. See you next time.